Bienvenidos a FinTech Talks. Este es un podcast de finanzas y tecnología. Aquí te vamos a estar platicando de las tendencias, las noticias, de cómo se está revolucionando la industria financiera y las nuevas formas de hacer negocios. Mi nombre es Roberto Aguilar, director de Día FinTech y Aguilar Sang. Abogado, emprendedor y profesor especialista en el sector, creo que las finanzas y los negocios han cambiado para siempre. Gracias a las nuevas tecnologías y las innovaciones. Aquí te vamos a estar platicando de manera muy clara y sencilla qué está pasando en el mundo de las fintech, las criptomonedas, los NFTs y el metaverso. Y recuerda estar al día con Día FinTech. ¡Bienvenidos! Okay, so, well, thank you very much, Dave, for being here. Thank you also all the people that is watching us or listen to us now. Dave came from LA
yep.
yesterday to record this podcast. So thank you very much to come and welcome to Guadalajara.
Thank you. appreciate you having me, and I'm always looking for an excuse to come to Guadalajara. So.
Perfect. So, okay. So starting from the beginning, Dave. So your name is Dave Taylor.
Yep.
You are 42 years old.
Correct.
And if you can explain or if can you describe who is Dave Taylor?
Yeah.
What's your background?
Yeah.
What have you done in the past, and
sure.
what are you doing now?
Yeah. So my background's computer science. And I've recently gotten into business the last 7 years. But primarily, I would say my skill set was programming, design, computer algorithms, computer programs. So I would, you know, before this startup, I worked as CTO on a few companies. So I was CTO for a company called Memo, who I did with a partner of mine. Memo's like a social media platform.
Okay.
Before that, we had an incubator called Joy Labs, and we launched quite a few companies.
Joy Labs?
Joy Labs, yeah.
Okay.
Quite a few fintech companies in the United States from Joy Labs. That's primarily where we got the, drive to do what we're doing today. Before that, I was at Apple for 5 years. I led a few engineering teams. We did crypto. Not the new crypto, but the old crypto.
Cryptography, right?
Cryptography, PKI, and we essentially created APIs that make it easier for developers to do crypto and to safely, simply. We also did a lot of network discovery stuff, so crawling networks and managing assets. And so did that for 5 years. Before that, I was at Boeing, and I did the loadable software. So we did the security element that would let you load software on planes. And
Boeing, the plane manufacturer, right?
Yeah, Boeing, okay. Up in Seattle.
Okay.
Yep. And as far as I'm aware, none of our software has flown off the plane in flight, unlike the doors. So
okay.
I'm pretty happy with us so far.
Because I remember there was like a series of Boeing that had a huge problem, right? Like
Boeing's, yeah. I mean, Boeing has had a few.
Yeah.
Right now, I would say one of the worst. And when a door flies off in flight, that's pretty bad, you know?
Yeah, I can imagine.
But Boeing will have relatively flying safe. You know, statistically, it's very safe. It's surprising we don't have more problems, but they've had some issues. And whenever there's an issue, you hear about it. Like shark attacks, people are very scared of flying. So, and before that, I did startups. So I've been programming for quite some time. Except that this startup's the least I've actually developed. I've been more in the leadership space, so been CEO of this startup, and I don't know if we want to get into that yet, but yeah, so my background from the United States, I've been there, lived there most of my life. I've lived a little bit in Europe, and that's me, Dave Taylor.
Great, man. So, talk about maybe a little bit about your new startup that is called Etherfuse,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, like, what are you doing there? What's your role there?
Yeah.
And why? Why Etherfuse?
So, I founded Etherfuse with my brother, AJ Taylor. He's
okay.
CTO of the company. And
you are the CEO, right?
CEO, correct.
So, two co-founders?
Two co-founders.
Okay.
Yeah. And we've been operating the last 2 years, and we've been operating primarily in Mexico. So, we founded two companies in Mexico, one called Etherfuse MX. one called Etherfuse Liquid MX. Fundamentally, what we're trying to do is improve access to risk-free investments on the blockchain. So we believe, you know, the blockchain is relatively chaotic, but can provide a lot of value for a lot of people. And so we think, you know, if you look back in history and you say, you know, what were nations able to do to create stability and to create communities and generate success? You know, bonds were really the interface for that. Bonds allowed, like, the Presidi allowed, like, Venice to create a way to generate revenue off of some revenue stream and gain investment and then create the stability that let Venice succeed. And same with France. France had rents. You know, the Dutch did really well. And a lot of, like, the...
With bonds, right?
With bonds, yeah.
Okay.
So a lot of Europe's success financially started with bonds.
And how, like, maybe in a general or more, I don't know, like, easy way to describe a bond. Like, if someone does not know, what is a bond?
Yeah, so a bond, it is bare minimum. Let's say a sovereign bond, a government bond. A bond is a way a government raises money to do stuff. And so you can say, I'm going to give you 100 pesos, and the government will say, in a year, if you invest this in a year bond, I'll give you 112 pesos back.
Okay.
So it's risk-free. So you know you're getting 12% or 11% back.
Because the government is the one that owes you that money, right?
Yeah, and unless the government defaults, you will get that money back. So examples would be perhaps Argentina may default right now on some of their bonds. But I think people who took on that debt knew that, you know. But if you look at Mexico, it's triple B plus rated. If you look at the United States, triple A rated. They're not going to default. They're not going to want to risk that. So you're pretty safe investing into government bonds. That's what a government bond is. It's like, we have a revenue stream. Give us some money so we can develop it. And then here's that, your interest or your principal plus some return.
Okay. No, yeah. And in Mexico, the way to invest in these bonds, it's through CETES, right?
Yeah, so I would say the best way for a Mexican to invest in bonds is through CETES Directo. Not through us, but through CETES Directo.
Okay.
Buy them directly, get them, you get premier access, and earn some interest back.
Yeah, and right now the interest rate that gives you, I think it's around 12%, right? Like, per year.
Very, very high. So around the world, that's really high.
Yeah.
And especially given your rating, the Mexican liquidity in the bond market's crazy good, you know, and very stable. And so that's a screaming deal, I guess we say in the States. And I think a lot of people outside of Mexico would love to have access to that.
Yeah. For example, if I want to invest in a U.S. bond, what's the interest rate now?
Interest rate for a U.S., well, they're all different types, but for, let's say, a short term.
Yeah, something similar to CETES.
You're looking at 4.5%.
Yeah, so that's crazy, man.
Like, it's crazy.
Almost three times.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember when I was doing my master's abroad, like my German friends, there were times that the government give you, like, financing with zero interest, right?
Yeah.
Or like, I remember that also, like, the energy, at some point they had that like too much energy. So basically they were paying you to use electricity, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. So maybe for us it's something, let's say, normal. I'm saying, like, in Mexico or maybe Latin America, I'm not sure, but at least in Mexico, like, having this type of products or this type of investment options, such as a bond, is quite good. And if you see it, like from abroad, it's crazy high, no?
Yeah, it's a great deal.
It's a great deal, yes.
And for the most part, it's like just a good idea. You know, if you don't want to become an investor or a trader and focus your whole life on how you should move money around, just put it in bonds and forget about it. And you'll be in great shape, you know. And I would say Mexico right now is unique in that it's very safe with high yield or high interest. Generally, a yield will represent volatility plus, like, that government's willingness or interest in raising funds. And so it's right now it's a good opportunity. It may change, but right now I think the world would love to tap into CETES particularly.
Nice. So you said something that was very interesting for me that I didn't know exactly how or who rates the countries, because you were saying that Mexico is triple B plus. Triple B plus.
Yeah.
Okay. And then US is
Triple A. Yeah,
triple yeah. A. Yeah. Okay. So how is this ranking system?
So the ranking system is by credit agencies. Okay. The big ones like Fitch and Moody. There's a few others. There's generally three that people trust, and then they just assume those across the world. They just adhere them. I think they are most predominantly U.S. companies that rate them.
Okay.
But your rating comes from that.
All right. So what are the grades? Like which is like the best grade and the worst grade?
Yeah, best would be AAA plus, then I think there's A minus, and so it goes AA, single A, B, B plus, all the way down to lower and lower and lower. So
okay.
Anything generally double B plus is gonna be pretty good, and a government's not gonna wanna lose that rating, you know?
Yeah, of course, okay. So for example, like do you have any idea like what's the ranking or what's the rate in Argentina now? Or
I don't know.
No, but it's super bad.
I would
bad,
say right? It's not going to be good right now.
Okay.
It'll probably change in the future, but I think there needs to be a lot of hard times. You know, a lot of paying back some probably excess spending and things like that. I'm not an economist, you know.
But you know more than me. Yeah. I mean, at least like about the rates. Okay.
Yeah.
So and. So with Etherfuse, like we were talking before, now like one of your main products is tokenizing bonds. So let's say, in other words, like putting like CETES through blockchain, right?
Correct. Giving access to the rest of the world.
Exactly.
To CETES through the blockchain. I'd like to, if you don't mind, step back, because I think the best way to explain this is to kind of explain what exists and maybe some problems with that, and then why it's important. So I think the blockchain, we all kind of feel that it's going to be this technology of the future, but there's not a lot of things that have absolute product market fit. So I would say, for sure, stable coins have product market fit on the blockchain. Sending money on the blockchain is better than anywhere else. It's cheaper, it's faster, holds value you know, across the
much
world.
Much more efficient, yeah.
I'd say you could argue that artwork, NFTs have some product market fit. And I think some of the infrastructure, like mining and stuff, those make sense and make some money. And so for me, those three things are kind of like the only thing that have for sure today a fit. The problem with that is, as the rest of the world continues to use stable coins, we are primarily giving the value we create to whoever operates that stable coin. So if you look at a company, a stablecoin company, like let's take Circle, and we know Circle because they report what they have. When you give them a dollar, they give you a token back. And they take that dollar and they take 75% of it and they buy treasuries. And they take the other quarter and they put it in the bank. And so if you are a Mexican and you're using USDC to transact, value...
Circle is the ones that create USDC, right?
Yeah, Circle. Okay. And then they're a US company.
Okay.
So the value you created by holding your money in that token is all going to Circle. So a small set of people and in the US. And so it's not benefiting you here.
No, okay.
So what we said is, well, why don't we, we have a lot of value we could capture for people across the world. Why don't we make it so that if people want to own that bond directly, they can, and they can do it in a way that benefits their community. So we started with Mexico. For other reasons too. And so when we create a token for you, we give you the whole bond. So if instead of you give us a dollar, we give you a dollar worth of CETES, you also can earn the interest off that token too. And it benefits your country. And so we think that it's just going to be a better, more fair store of value across the world than us relying on one company that creates a stable coin. And so that's what a stable bond is. It's literally a stable
bond, yes, okay. Yeah.
Bond. So in the behind the scenes, we have a company here, we have brokerages here, we purchase with your funds that bond, and as interest payments come in, we pay them out to you, and you earn that interest directly.
And you pay it through crypto, right?
Through the blockchain, yeah.
Through the blockchain, right. Okay. And, well, we were talking about this before, but now you are using a Solana blockchain, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why? Like...
Yeah, that's a good question. We get that asked a lot. We also get asked a lot because our name is Etherfuse.
Etherfuse, it sounds yeah. A lot like yeah, I thought Ethereum. It was like about for Ethereum, yeah.
I wonder if, you know, if I could go back, maybe I would change it. Etherfuse, the name comes from the idea, ether in English is like elements floating around, and fuse is bringing them together for some purpose, you know. So I like the name. I even owned the name before Ethereum was... a blockchain, so I've owned it forever, you know.
Okay.
But it was fitting.
And Fuse? Why Fuse?
Fuse is taking something together, like fusing it.
Okay.
Joining
it, you know?
So taking information, putting it together, and creating a product. That's what we feel we're doing, you know.
Okay.
And, you know, we know we had to start somewhere. We started 2 years ago, so near the end of the boom. And we thought back then you could raise money quick, you could do things quick. So we thought, okay, for 3 months we'll do proof of product, and then we'll raise a bunch of money, and we'll hire a huge team, and then we'll push it out. But then Terra Luna went under, and then FTX went under, and so as
which one you said before FTX?
Terra Luna. So
Terra Luna, yeah.
You remember Duquan?
Yeah.
That was like the beginning, I would say, of the bear market.
What happened with FTX? It closed now?
Or yeah, well, I think it's coming back. They're in bankruptcy right now. Essentially, SBF was using customers' funds to do other things. And
They were investing in their own, I think, in their own fund, right?
Yeah, they were just moving money inappropriately, you know. So. And then they ran out of money when they got called out on it.
And this guy, it's called Sam Bank, right? Or
Sam Bankman-Fried.
So, yeah. What happened with him? Like, you know,
he's still in court. You know, okay. It looks like he's going to go to jail forever. But
okay.
but yeah, he's been in jail for quite some time, and I don't know when court's going to end, but it should go on for quite some time. So.
Right. So basically, you create a startup, a crypto startup company, during the bear market, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
What like. How was that feeling? I mean, like...
It's horrible, yeah.
Because, I mean, like when everything was going good, I mean, everything was happy, no? But, I mean, yeah. I guess... I mean, should be bad, like, at the moment, but looking, like, the positive way, it also, like, somehow... it's like a depuration, no? Of the crypto ecosystem, the crypto startup. But I don't know... What happened in your head during that time?
Yeah, I'll say it is probably going to end up to be very lucky for us because we seem to have survived. Things are turning around a little bit. We built a lot of trust in the bear market. People know who we are. And then also we were forced to build a real product, you know, and we removed a lot of people who provide unmeaningful noise in our products, you know. So... it's looking like it's going to end up being a blessing in disguise, I guess we say. But it felt very it was very hard throughout the whole process. You know, we closed our round like a week before Terra Luna went under. And so it was nice that we had the cash to survive. But it was just hard to get going. It was a ton of work. And it's hard to convince people that the idea was worth a lot. But now that things are ticking up, we're in a really good position just because we endured and stayed through it. So, yeah, it probably ended up being the best thing that could happen.
Okay.
It just didn't feel like it at the time.
Yeah, I can imagine. So basically, you opened like during the bear market. So and what are your thoughts about like the bear market and about the crypto ecosystem in general now? Because I mean. I would say that also like NFTs, like during 2021, I think was like the main thing, you know, and everyone was buying NFTs, and then we have like Bored Apes, CryptoPunks, and then everything crashes, and then crypto go from almost 70K to 20K, 18K, 15K.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we have the cases of FTX, Terra Luna, all kind of scams. There's a lot of scams too, like yeah. in the crypto, no? So what could you tell someone that still thinks that crypto is just a scam? Or even Bill Gates, I think once he said that crypto is like a Ponzi scheme.
Well, I think that they're right. You know, there is the majority of things are scams, you know?
The majority, right?
That unfortunately tends to happen with any new technology. Like any new technology first is preceded by less moral things, I guess I would say. You know, even cryptography, originally cryptography used to be this super controversial product. Like, I don't know if you remember PGP, like everyone was getting threatened by the US government for encrypting things and sending it out, you know, and now we realize, oh, the utility of secrets in the computer era is really important. So it's unfortunate, but I also just think it's any new technology is gonna have it. If you look at email, you know, when email first came out, it was all spam, it was all scams.
Yeah.
If you look at the internet, it was a lot of garbage, you know. And then, so I think the onus or the duty is upon founders to build valuable products and real products and to push the technology forward. For us, we actually believe that bonds, introducing bonds into the blockchain is like one foundational step towards adoption because it'll create stability. Right now you have these price hikes and then they crash out because there's nothing under it. Well, if you build products on top of bonds, you at least have a floor, you know, a risk-free investment. So if you build savings accounts on top of bonds, you at least have your initial capital that will always be there. And so I think it's just a stability step in the way of crypto that's needed. And I also just think, you know, accessibility around the world, you know, like an African will have a hard time buying a US treasury or a Mexican treasury, you know, but we did a marketing campaign today and we had many Africans buying CEDES today.
That's what you said.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's crazy, you know, like it's Africans crazy. Buying set like Mexican CETES, Mexican bonds.
It's wild. I mean, it took us a long time to set up accounts to be able to do it, almost a year, you know. And so the fact that you can come to Etherfuse and within 7 minutes legally be able to buy CETES is, we think, a lot of value. And, you know, we're starting with Mexico, but we're adding, ideally our goal is to have the world's bonds on chain.
Wow, that's huge.
Soon, anyone in the world will be able to invest in any safe, risk-free bond across the world whenever they want.
And I have a question. So it will affect the stability of, in this case, Solana? I mean, Solana can go higher or can go down, right? So it will affect to, like...
Yeah, we believe it will improve stability. Yeah.
Okay.
It's just like a safe investment. You know, I think some people, like if DeFi as an example, a lot of DeFi people will stake against things to earn yield and then they'll get a staking token and move it somewhere else. So you build this house of cards where the base case or in computer science, you know, we say base case for a recursive function. It's nothing. Well, if you kind of foundationally build on top of bonds, you at least have something to build off of. And if you think about it, letting people choose how their money is invested is important. Like right now, when you put your money in a bank, you don't have any choice into what they do with it. You know, they'll give out loans, they'll do, you know, politics will say certain people should get investments, you know. So you don't really have a choice and you get 2% back if you're lucky. Well, in crypto, we can just say anytime you put a stablecoin in your wallet, swap it out with a bond, and you're getting 11% no matter what. You have that choice.
Of course.
So we just think it's like the freedom of determining what happens to your money, and the blockchain enables you to do that pretty simply. You don't need anyone in the way to tell you what to do.
Okay. And there are other companies that are doing like similar stuff, like... Because, I mean, I never heard about, like, stable bond. Like, I mean, the concept, per se, I never heard. So it was, like, the first time.
Like stable bonds. We did invent the name and the technology. Yeah, so okay. Stable bonds is our idea.
Okay.
There are other people who've thought about doing like managed assets of bonds, but they're still managing a class of assets. No one has so far tokenized an actual bond and represented as a token, and then have that be transactive, tradable. So we're the first in the world to offer a freely tradable tokenized bond.
Okay.
Well, so that's why you haven't heard of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's impressive, and congratulations, and so how can I buy like a bond now with you through Etherfuse? Like, so I will need to like buy I guess Solana, then
yeah,
have it on my wallet, then connect it through your platform.
Yes.
Do I need to do like a KYC process or
you do? No?
Yeah, okay, yeah. through Etherfuse.
Correct. Okay. They are securities, and we follow Mexican regulatory law, so we are required to monitor KYC, and any purchases over somewhere close to $40,000 a month, we have to run through an AML checklist. You know,
40K per month.
Yeah, 40K USD per month, about.
Yeah, that's a lot.
The exact number my lawyer will tell
okay,
you.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
We program it in. So there's okay. Another layer of questions that comply with AML law. I can't remember what the original question was, but yeah, so we adhere to all that. I'd say the general advice to be able to do this is to go to allowlist.etherfuse.com, where you can get more information. Right now it is closed loop, so it is whitelisted. You have to be invited. And so if you want to find out how to do that at allowlist.etherfuse.com is where you would do that. After that, what you do is, and you've created an account, or we've helped you establish an account, you go to stablebonds.etherfuse.com, and we essentially make listings that the market has. So we follow the CETES market, or U.S. bond market, or Spanish bond market. And as there's listings for bonds for sale, we also create issues of those on-chain. And so you can take USDC, and soon you'll be able to take Tether and any other stable bond and be able to purchase that bond on-chain.
Okay, okay. I have a random question, because now you were talking about USDC. What's the difference between USDC and USDT?
USDC is Circle. So Circle, USDC yeah. is Circle's stablecoin. So the C stands for Circle, and
yeah, yeah.
So you give Circle a dollar, they give you a token, and they hold that dollar in the bank. USDT is Tether.
Okay.
So yeah. Tether is the asset manager and the central company.
And both are regulated in US, right?
No, only Circle is regulated in the US. USDT, Tether is not regulated in the US.
Okay.
They're just outside of the US.
Okay. And which one is bigger? Like
Tether is significantly bigger.
Yeah, right.
I think Tether's an 80 billion market cap, and whoa. Circle's like 30.
Okay. And well, I we were talking before, but why Mexico? You came from a very tech from a very tech background. You worked in Apple. You were working with tech startups in US. So I'm very curious about why Mexico,
yeah.
why crypto, but specifically why you saw Mexico as your main market, yeah. I mean, at least for now.
So first, let me answer why crypto, and then I'll do why Mexico. Why crypto? You know, one of the past startups we started is called NeuroPayments, and it's a payment company in the US, and it's doing really well. It's kind of like enabling credit unions to pay people directly, so P2P.
Okay.
Our experience there, it's pretty eye-opening just how complex the payment system in the United States is. It's bloated through layers and layers of technology, and so there's a lot of, I would say, people in the way of enabling someone to transact cheaply, freely. So it's very expensive, more expensive than it needs to be. So when we saw Solana specifically, it's less than a penny to send money,
yeah.
And it works, and it's safe, and it's quick, you know? faster than sending money on the banking system in the States, and cheaper. And so you can build things on top of it. And so now, you know, it's not necessarily better, but I believe in 10 years it will be definitely be better. So that's why we picked cryptos. We saw, oh, there's an opportunity to change the world here and to build products that will dominate in the future. And so we wanted to spend time in an ecosystem like this. Why Mexico? I get this question all the time. You know, my Spanish isn't good enough. I don't look Mexican enough to justify it, you know. I think, you know, I'm big into game theory. I don't know if you ever looked at game theory at all. You know, we initially tried to do this in the United States and just realized the U.S. is never going to let us change how things are. So if you look at through a lens of game theory.
So I don't know what is game theory.
Game theory is like to anything we're trying to do. And as we grow, I would be insecure feeling and always battling.
Yeah, because you have the SEC, and the SEC is, I want to say this like politely, but like, I don't know, it's not the same like the equivalent, the SEC in El Salvador than the SEC from the U.S. No? Yeah. Like the SEC in the U.S., they go for you, you know, like they will chase you, you know?
Yep.
And I mean, other countries, even Latin America, it's, let's say, more flexible, no?
Yeah.
And with the SEC, you can't mess. You won't win a war.
Yeah.
Right?
You won't. Yeah. No. They have more money than you. They have more
power. Everything.
They have nothing to lose. You know, like you get in a lawsuit, Gary Gensler will go to bed sleeping happy at night, and you'll be worrying if your kids aren't going to have a dad. You know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's just not worth it. So the leverage isn't there. So strategically, we didn't think it was worth it. And as a startup, you don't have enough money to hire the lawyers and to fight that battle. And so we kind of looked up, stepped back and said, who in the world would benefit from a change in the financial structure of the world? And if you look at like outflows of money from the States, you got China, you have India, you have Mexico. And so what's the biggest economy that would want to, that could benefit from the blockchain? So, you know, Mexico is now America's biggest partner. A lot of Mexicans still don't have bank accounts. It's hard to get bank accounts. The average loan price here is extremely high.
The interest rate, and that's crazy because the interest on one side, the interest rates are crazy high, like top two to top three in the world.
Yeah.
And on the other side, like, I mean, now it's changing, but like if you have your money in your bank account, they won't give you like nothing.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. Like, yeah. I mean, but for us, it's, I mean, well, not for, like for Mexicans in general, it's normal because we are used to that, no? But if you go or you see in other countries, like you get interest for having your money in your bank account. And we were talking before about like the market in Mexico. I mean, now I will say since 2018, because of the fintech law, blah, 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 it has been changing. There's more options, I will say. But I think the financial inclusion part is still missing because it's just like the same people now have more options, but still the unbanked people is still unbanked. So I think that's also one of the main challenges or opportunities in Mexico. And I think, and I believe, like, I mean, this type of solutions can really help, and also other thing that goes like parallel to this is like the digital inclusion. Like maybe I don't know in US, but I'm sure that everyone has internet.
Yeah.
But still in Mexico, like I don't know 6-8 years ago, like was not still like a big thing. Now like I think there are more smartphones than people in Mexico.
Yeah.
So and now digital inclusion, it's pretty good. I mean, I wouldn't say it's like perfect, but it's like quite good.
Yeah.
So I think now like everything is, I will say, settled to bank people, you know.
I agree, and you know, in addition to those needs of Mexico that can be solved by the blockchain, we also need a government to tell us what we're able to do. Like, believe it or not, most crypto entrepreneurs don't want to break the law, but it's hard if you don't know what the law is. So
yeah, of course.
We just had, looking through looking at it through game theory or strategy, we said, okay, Mexico has a lot to benefit from the adoption of the blockchain. So we think that if we go through the regulatory process, that we will likely to be able to get clear guidance and an answer. And so that's why we started here. You know, we've been engaging with the CNBV. We've been engaging with our lawyers and politicians. And I think we were right. You know, we weren't sure we were right. But the biggest bet our company made was that Mexico would the biggest bet was on Mexico, to be honest, and that we would be able to find a way to make a home here and to do things legally and lawfully. So we picked Mexico as our regulatory umbrella. It definitely hasn't been easy, but I think that it doesn't matter that it's us or anyone else. It's just that Mexico has a lot to benefit and can probably move from the 12th biggest economy in the world to like the fifth if they just lead the Americas in adoption of the blockchain and how it can regulate it and how can we attract entrepreneurs from around the world to build tools for us and the rest of the world. And so when we offer the rest of the world Mexican investments through the blockchain legally, that's a good signal. Like we're bringing money into this economy, doing it legally. We're bringing talent in here and doing it legally. And it's only benefiting Mexico.
Yeah. And I think also, like, I mean, Mexico, I mean, U.S. is like the first like business partner of Mexico. And I think it's vice versa, right?
So yeah, you're our biggest trade partner.
Yeah. So, I mean, at the end, like U.S. being the first economy in the world, they like guide like the financial, how financial system should work. At the end, somehow they take care of us, and yeah. Still we need to comply with what they want. Yeah. So I will say that it's, I mean, of course, it's not the U.S., but still it's like a very safe country, or at least like in economic-wise and financial-wise.
Yeah.
Like we should follow what like U.S. say,
yeah.
But still have much more flexibility with this type of like technology, right?
Yeah, I would love to see the government of Mexico, and I believe they will, stand more on their own of leading the way. And I think they can. And stepping back, I think the U.S. and Mexico, culturally, we're more alike than we're different. I know since we're neighbors, there's always stories and maybe polarization, but I mean, we're very similar in how we think and you know, even our traditions and our, like we're very close. If you go to Europe, you can tell like, oh no, I feel way more at home in Guadalajara than I do in Switzerland or Germany, you know? just an example, you know, you had the Bitcoin ETF approved today.
And yeah, what do you think about that?
I think it's interesting. It's weird because it's like,
because we'll be listed in Wall Street, right?
It'll be traded you'll be able to invest in it, not directly, but through like a mutual fund and things like that. So I think it's weird one because it's like Bitcoin's whole meaning is to not be that way, you know?
Yeah.
But it's good in that more people will buy Bitcoin. But I think the thing that was most interesting to me is I follow Espacio Crypto. Do you follow that
Telegram?
They're really excited, like, oh, is the U.S. going to enable this? And I guess what I'd like to see is more like entrepreneurs here pushing Mexico to enable a spot Bitcoin ETF. You know what I mean? Like, why are we waiting on the U.S.? We could do it here. And that's what I'd like to see more. And maybe you have it here, but I guess let's not wait on the U.S. to innovate. Let's build it here. And I think if we start, technologists will come here. You know, like some of America's greatest technologists aren't even born from.
But what I didn't understand, I don't know if you know, why they call it ETF? Because for me, an ETF, it's like, I don't know, like, for example, ETF of the Mexican stock market. So they pick like the best, stock companies or like the best companies, and then they do a list, and then you invest in the ETF, and then you have like a, you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, weirdly, ETFs are kind of like ICOs or tokens, you know, or like real world assets too. Like,
and you invest in several companies, right? Like usually with ETFs, right? Or yeah. I'm wrong. Yeah.
So you can. So like the SP 500.
Yeah, exactly.
Proportional stocks in the top 500 performing companies.
Yeah.
So if you want to invest in a ETF, the SP 500, you buy a share of this pool and a manager goes out and buys those. So you don't have to buy all 500, you just buy one thing.
Exactly.
So with Bitcoin, you'll have like BlackRock or a company, they'll raise funds through an ETF where you pay money and they give you a share and then they go buy the Bitcoin. You don't manage it yourself.
Okay, okay. But at the end, you're just investing in Bitcoin, right? I mean, it's...
You can sell that share, and however the price of Bitcoin changed is the price of your share.
Okay, okay, okay. Yeah, that's... I don't know. Do you think it's an unnecessary intermediary or it's okay?
I think it's many things. I think it represents the development of Bitcoin. Like, you know, not everyone wants to get a wallet and set it up and buy Bitcoin.
Yeah, you know, that's true. That's true.
Maybe some people
just want to invest.
Give me $1,000 of Bitcoin.
Yeah, because today I saw that Bitcoin was almost 50K, no? Like, I think it was because of that, no? Or
yeah, it should. I think everyone thought it was going to skyrocket. It looks like it didn't yet so far. But that's what everyone's excited about. But yeah. My main point was, why are we waiting on the U.S.? You know, I really believe Mexico could lead the Americas, not just Latin America, but North America too. Like, let's create laws that make sense, and let's push our government and our regulators to think about it, and let's build ETFs here. And why wait on somebody else? Mexico's a big enough market to move things forward, and people trust this market. And so that's my main point in even bringing that up.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no, you're completely right. But I will say that also that's maybe my point of view, but I think in some regulations, specifically like maybe crypto, Mexico won't do something that USA does not like.
Yeah.
In a regulatory point of view.
In some ways, maybe, but we're seeing... What we're doing here, we could not do in the U.S., even though it's very safe, you know, like, and some other projects we're working on, like, I'm trying to think if I can talk about this or not. I think that I can, but we're asking to do a general public sell on the blockchain to the general public, which the U.S. would never do, you know?
Yeah, okay.
But it's still a net good and benefit for the general population. So I think they will, but I don't think they will do things like market securities to the U.S. or let American citizens open bank accounts and do things that are illegal in the U.S. So I think there is a boundary for sure. But I don't think there's any reason why Mexico shouldn't do things that are in their best interest as a country because America says no. And I'm American and I like America. I just think the world would be better if... there was more distribution of power and decision making and rewards and value creation across the world.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Thanks. So, and I wanted to ask you before, were you like early adopter of Bitcoin? Like when was the first time that you like Bitcoin?
I got into Ethereum around 2016.
Okay. You know?
But I was just casual.
I
dove in late, you know, after we built the U.S. payments company, I was like, okay, this is the future, you know. So I didn't really dive in. Now I'm too invested, you know, my whole livelihood pretty much. But really, I didn't dive in until 2 years ago. But I owned money in Ethereum and I dabbled and I played and I bought an NFT a long time ago, you know.
Okay.
So,
did you buy like any like famous NFT collection?
No, you know, I grew up too poor to do something like that.
Okay, you know? Okay, yeah, but I mean, like, do you remember like Bored Apes at when they started? It was like $180.
It was crazy.
$180, like nothing.
Yeah,
I mean, now I don't know, but and what do you think, like, in general, maybe it's a beside question, but what do you think about NFTs in general? Like, I don't know, like, NFTs as we know that, Bored Apes, CryptoPunks, Azuki.
I think we got to wait and see. I think there's some value in, like, collectors, you know, like Pokemon cards. I think there's something there. Obviously, there's something there, you know. And community building, I think it, like, it's shown some meaningful way to, like, target a community and, like, airdrop them things. So, but I don't think we know yet. I think there's more. And I think this is, like, we're so early on the product stage of it that it's going to iterate. But I think there's definitely something there. You know, we look at it as a bond, you know. So a stable bond, it's a token, but if you want to collect interest before, so if it's like a long-term bond, we have to convert it into an NFT. So if we use an NFT as a bond, too.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. Here in Mexico, like we were talking before about like Cholo, like the Mexican team, and like here in Mexico, they have created like some NFTs as a part of a membership to be part of like a soccer community, and sometimes you get tickets. Like for example, Cholos did that, Tigres did that, Chivas like feminine, like for girls, they also did that. I'm talking about Mexico, like some baseball team. So I think that's quite interesting, like NFTs as a piece of art with a nice design, but you have access to a membership or a community, right?
Yeah, I don't own many NFTs, but I do own a Cholo Locker Room NFT.
Really?
Yeah, so Gog's a friend of mine, and I think they've done something pretty cool. You know, they have a lot of rewards baked into their NFT. It makes sense, right?
It makes sense.
It's an NFT, but you also have access, you have discounts, and I think they're even considering, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but tokenization of the stadium, so like access to seats and stuff like that. Makes total sense.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, I have two of Chivas Femenil, of Chivas Girl Team. Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, that was nice. Yes, so thank you very much, Dave, for everything you explained us so far. So what I would like to ask you next is, what is coming next for you with Etherfuse? Like, I mean, now you are focusing in Mexico, and now I will say that your main product is like tokenizing bonds, and so you can invest in Mexican bonds that are called CETES that give you 10 to 12% interest rate per year.
Yeah.
But what is next?
So I think next is kind of two parts. One is like expanding the type of products we have. So United States bonds, European bonds, Latin American bonds, and continuing to expand that. So anyone from the world can come to us and say, you know, I really believe in what Argentina's doing, even though things aren't going well. I want to buy a 10-year bonds because I believe that they will grow considerably or you know, something like that. So we are, I would say, primarily that we're improving the types of stocks and bonds that we offer. And then in addition to that, we're giving programmatic access. So we think most of the value that we will give to people is to entrepreneurs and developers. So most of the financial world is built upon bonds, banks, investment funds. And so once we give programmatic access to wallets and exchanges, enabling them to build cool stuff. So that's what we're going to do next.
Okay, nice. And what do you think about like scams or let me rephrase, what would you recommend to like for people to being able to identify a scam? And why I'm saying this, I mean, you know that in the crypto world, there's a lot of scams, but also like here in Mexico, and especially like here in Jalisco, Guadalajara, there has been a lot of scams. So basically, I mean, there's a lot of stories. One very famous was one that was called Cifra. They were doing like a kind of a Ponzi scheme through Bitcoin, and it was when Bitcoin was going higher.
Yeah.
Very high, and I think they raised like $600 million. That's it was a company from here, from Guadalajara.
Wow.
And now, like some others, but they were giving you like 5% per month or even 10% per month.
Yeah.
And then some other financial, like maybe traditional companies, they will give you like 3.5% per month.
Yeah.
Here in Mexico. And then like they, of course, at some point they will just, they won't be able to pay you and then disappear. And then people claim the government or the state like, oh, it's your fault. But I mean,
yeah,
you know, so I don't know. What are your thoughts about like scam in general? And
I think that's tough. I think probably the surest way to avoid it is to look who stuck around during the bear market and who was still building things during the bear market. Because you can't survive in a bear market without quality.
Yeah.
But it's always going to be hard and there will always be scams. And ideally, the government gets better, entrepreneurs get better, and we're more able to identify these things. If you look at us, we have an incorporated legal entity here, so there's something you could go after. And it is our hardest problem here is we have a hard time building trust because people, I think, just initially assume we're a scam too. So it's a tough problem. I don't know the exact answer.
Okay, yeah, right. So, yeah, and so... Like and like, I will say that also one of the main problems, one of the main opportunities or challenges in Mexico is financial education, right? So maybe you can educate financially people through technology. What are your thoughts about that? Because for example, if you compare, I don't know the exact number, but I will say like something random, but I think like US, I don't know the percentage, but I think it's like maybe 5-10% or 20% of the population does invest in whatever, like bonds or stocks or whatever, no? And in Mexico, I think it's like less than 1% or like nothing, no? So, I mean, I think that's a great opportunity for you and but in general, no? Like how can you... Or how should that challenge be addressed?
I think there's a bunch of challenges within there. One company that does pretty good here is Kuspit. Like their stock exchange, before you're able to buy a type of investment, you have to take a class on what that investment is. It's just like 10 minutes, you know?
Nice.
I think they do pretty good. But I think more than that, like when I grew up pretty poor, I would say, especially for the States. And I can't even imagine ever at some point in my life having enough money to think about investing. I was just getting by, you know?
Okay, yeah.
So I'm sure a lot of people here feel that way too, you know? So for those type of people who I was, I think it's more engineers and entrepreneurs building products that kind of help them out. So like a savings account that invests safely for them and products that are better than banks, you know? I think that's going to be the best way. And improving the economy so that there are people who have extra money to invest is an important part too. Kuspit does pretty good, but yeah, I think, you know, we try to, for every bond we add, we try to have videos and documentation to explain what it is. But I think it's like just proliferating, you know, when you do get a crypto wallet or a bank account, or whatever, it's kind of hard to not learn about it in some capacity, but...
Yeah, because it took me a while. Like I remember the first time that I bought crypto maybe, I don't know, 4 years ago or maybe five, like 2018 when it was when I downloaded like Bitso, you know, it was kind of easy. But then to go to the DeFi, like to send your crypto to a cold wallet and then like to buy... Like I remember the first time that I bought an NFT, it took me like quite some time because it's kind of difficult to understand. It's not that easy. So yeah, I mean that was just like a parenthesis. So yeah, I think there's still a lot of a need for education, for tech education, especially in blockchain, because I mean blockchain has a lot of opportunities. So like, yeah, what do you think like about blockchain in general, like as a technology, not just like maybe in financial, but as a technology?
I mean, I think that the blockchain in the future will be the primary mechanism for sending money internationally, for sure. I also think it'll be the way that we create kind of more equitable value capture. So if USDC is the only stablecoin that exists in the world, all the value the world creates through commerce only goes to a small amount of people in the US, you know? I think the blockchain enables anyone to create a competing product, just like it enabled USDC to exist, that will enable like communities to capture the value they create. So Visa has has a pretty dominant share of payments across the world, you know? If the blockchain can be the main payment system, local communities can build their own kind of infrastructure on top of it and make sure that their commerce provides benefit to their community. So I just think that there's so much value to capture for the consumer there that it's inevitable going to be the way that we transact in the future. And it's safe, it's secure, I own it. No one can take my money without my permission unless I make a mistake.
Yeah, of course.
So it's an amazing distributed technology that once it starts taking off, it's going to be probably impossible to stop, just like the internet, just like email.
And I think, I don't know, what are your thoughts? Because, I mean, you have kids, but like new generations are using like these technologies like super like normal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because for us, it might be more complicated to get used or to, I mean, if it's something new, but for me, like, I don't know, like, my nephew has 7 years now and he used like Roblox. And I mean, for me, Roblox is kind of like metaverse, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. And so just to finalize, also I want to ask you, what do you think about like metaverse, like in general? And do you see something going on in the future for you through metaverse or not really?
I do. I think one of the innovations we have with our bonds is our security model, where we attach a anonymous way for us to say this person has been KYC'd to a wallet that's not public, but adheres to like a regulation. So we have a way of determining a person's a real person via a wallet, and that person can go transact without in an anonymous way, you know? I think with the improvements in AI and the metaverse, it's gonna be impossible to know who's a real person. So yeah. I think the blockchain will be the main identity system that will let us be able to determine with zero knowledge that somebody's real. And we'll probably start using that pretty seriously in the next 4 years.
Yeah. What do you think, because you know, Apple, I mean, you work there, but like they created like these glasses. I haven't used it. Like, do you have any thoughts? No.
I haven't used them. Yeah, no, I think for sure it's coming. You know, yeah. AI is coming. The metaverse eventually will get here. I think, I don't know, if you've even seen some of these TikTok accounts that seem like a real person, they're not even a real person.
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
It's insane. You know,
And also like the songs, like they create a song like with the Bad Bunny voice or crazy.
So like right now, to determine if someone's real, you say this person's verified and you look and they're, I think in the future there'll be like a hash key and we'll say, okay, this person has gone through the steps to prove that they're a real person and then we can trust it. But I don't see any other technology besides crypto that's going to enable people to prove that they're a real person. Proof of humanism.
Okay.
Just clicking signs or clicking buttons now is not going to work anymore.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So one last question, Dave. It's obvious that you have like too much experience. You have been like working in tech like several years. You have also a lot of experience as an entrepreneur, as a businessman. So what will be your recommendation, like your business recommendation for entrepreneurs that want to build their company or are building their company, like in general, maybe 2-3 like main things, main like bullet points that you have learned in this like journey for you, like personal thoughts. Yeah,
I think it depends what stage you are. I think if you're young, take advantage of your youth and just take huge risks. You know, like risk, calculated risks, ones that you can fail from. You know, And I came out of, I didn't have pretty much any advantage. So it took me a long time to get to a place where I could take a risk, And so I didn't, I'm 43 now. I didn't start this company until I was 41. I worked with partners before then. So up until that stage, I was just developing skills, until I was ready. So everyone comes at a different stage in life.
Of course.
If you have a little bit of ability to go out and fail, do it. So I think the biggest thing you can do is just take the first step and do it. And even if your idea kind of doesn't seem good, you have to go out and do stuff to test it. So I don't think it takes a huge leap, but you have to do something, learn information, and change. So don't try to build the metaverse first. Try to talk to 20 people and see if they would be interested in communicating via headset. Like find simple, small steps that you can do and just make those steps.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And thank you very much for being here.
Appreciate it.